You may go, I'll let you go. May God bless you. You'll be mine wherever you may be. It's a warning to say aloha, 'cause you'll never find another Hawaiian like me. Oh no, you'll never find another Hawaiian like me. You may go, I'll let you go. May God bless you. You'll be mine wherever you may be. It's a warning to say aloha, 'cause you never find another Hawaiian like me. Oh no, you never find another Hawaiian like me. It's a warning to say aloha, 'cause you never find another Hawaiian like me. Oh no, you never find another Kaneka like you. Oh no, you never find another a people like us.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Lau.
Good morning, Carol.
You got a radio on there?
No, we don't. We are on speakerphone here.
Oh, okay, maybe that's the... I'm getting a feedback in the... let's see if we can... Are you able to... That may... How's that? Is it a little better? So we'll try to deal with this, and thank you for calling. I appreciate it, and I wanted to... That's not working. Okay, how about that? Okay. Anyway, we're getting a feedback, and I think we got it conquered here. So, what? Right off the bat, Mr. Lau. Okay, can you do me a favor is it possible that you go on direct line just to try to see if it's on your end?
Okay, we can try that again.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
we'll hang up here.
Okay. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with you.
Yo, what's up? What's up, Carol Cox?
The stars, and you should start looking at them. Okay.
How right. You doing?
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Good morning. I am anxiously awaiting your guest.
I'm getting a terrible feedback here. I don't know what we have here. Okay, that's better.
Really?
Yeah, okay, hold on. Good morning, Mr. Lau, you there?
Yes, Carol, I'm here.
Okay, that's better. I think we... Some kind of way we got a wires crossed here. and I had invited the state. Let me check to see if I have a prankster of the state here. Good morning, caller. You have a comment? Yeah, is this...
I don't really have a comment.
Okay. Anyway, Mr. Lau, thank you again for calling in and joining me here. I have some concerns, and I'm sure you have. You sent out a letter that Red Hill Fuel Storage Tank Leak Update. And in there, you were raising some concerns, and I want to thank you for being one of the people or entities that actually just not, for better words, drinking the Kool-Aid, and you're asking for accountability. And on behalf of myself and the public, I want to firsthand thank you. It's absolutely something needed. I see this administrative order of consent, and hopefully you can speak to that. And speak to your letter that you sent out and what prompted you to do this. And I'd like to have some questions later on, if you would. What were you involved in the development and writing and finalizing of the administrative order, or was it just solely the EPA, DOH, and the military?
We're not a party to the actual development of the ALC and SOW.
Mm-hmm.
We have no regulatory authority. We are a key stakeholder here, of course, because we use that resource for a source of drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
So we have not actually been involved in the development.
And I understand that you're not a regulatory, but you are, in fact, one of the most critical entities in the whole scheme of things, because you're delivering water that is impacted by this activity. And were you consulted or in the development of this? Did you have any participation in not from a regulatory, but did they consult with you, and to what degree?
Their consultations, I believe, very minimal. We have been, Carol, very vocal about our concerns and our recommendations, like, for example, double lining the tanks, like is stated in our letter to our customers. And so we've been more publicly just stating to our community and also to the regulators our concerns about the fuel facility at Red Hill. So I believe our positions are pretty clear and our suggestions are pretty clear. There's also a lot of documentation of discussion in the task force report that was done similar to the legislature in January of this year.
Mm-hmm. When they talk about test results and wells and what have you, in relationship to the wells that they're testing, where are your wells situated, and what's the likelihood of them being impacted, or have they been impacted, and have you detected any constituents of concern in your wells?
First of all, our wells are located to the north and south of the Red Hill facility. The closest being Halava Shaft to the northwest, about 5,000 feet to the northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And a little over a mile to the south is our Mauna Loa wells. Both of those wells help to supply water to our Honolulu system. We have been testing quarterly, and ever since we learned about this, the leak in tank number 5 in January of last year, I have been testing quarterly and have not detected any signs of petroleum contamination in those wells.
Mm-hmm.
We're also testing three other wells that are in the vicinity of Aiea and Halava, which we believe are the closest wells that would show signs if impacted.
Mm-hmm.
But at this time, the water that we're providing to our customers has no fuel contaminants in it.
So having said that, then, what are your concerns? Are you concerned that there is a great potential for it, or that it's inevitable, or you, would the Navy be and the DOH be fair to say, well, what's the red flag if you don't have it now? Is it a threat? Does it pose a threat to your source of water?
We believe that there is a potential threat.
Mm-hmm.
Just when you think about it, Carol, think about the age of the facility, the large volume of fuel stored in that facility, and it's located right smack over the drinking water aquifer that we also pump from. Our concern is the potential for that in the future there may be a plume that might migrate in either direction to the north or to the south. And then although we're not detecting it right now, that at some point in time it might actually be picked up in our wells.
Mm-hmm. What factors would influence the plume moving and migrating your way toward your ponds or the aquifer portion that you drain from? What factors, and from an engineer's standpoint, what would have to happen?
Well, there's a couple major things there, at least. One is the flow of the groundwater in the area, which is still being researched, and we are working with the USGS to actually create a very detailed groundwater model of the region. So the remember that groundwater is always flowing. It's never really stagnant or doesn't stay still, so it's always flowing, and that flowing of the groundwater could be a way to transport the fuel in various directions. The other concern is just the potential for catastrophic or large amount of fuel being released from the facility in a short period of time. When you think about it, in these 20 or so tanks, and I believe only maybe 15 or 16 might be in use right now, there's over 180 million gallons of fuel stored there at Red Hill, right over the drinking water aquifer. And if there was a large-scale release, say in the millions of gallons, what would be the impact, and where would it spread eventually?
Mm-hmm. So you're not worried, only where I should say, you're worried about most of it. You're not just worried about what's in the ground. You're also concerned with the potential of these 18 tanks that, in the AOC, they say 18 tanks are actually being used. So that means any one of those tanks or all 18 could leak and devastate that water, that aquifer. Is that correct?
That is correct. And what we've seen from one of the Navy documents reference to a leak back in 1947 in tank number 16. It was due to an earthquake event on Oahu. And they lost around 44,000 gallons of fuel of that incident. We've been trying to obtain a copy of that report because we'd like to learn more about it. When you think about this facility in simple terms, it's a facility that was built between 1940 and 43. The barrier or the containment vessel that's holding the fuel and keeping it from getting into the environment is quarter-inch steel plate that was welded together. Also remember that each tank is huge, 250 feet high, 150 feet across in diameter. And also keep in mind, and we're very familiar with aging infrastructure, this quarter-inch steel plate is probably corroding on the outside of the walls of the steel plate, and there's no real way to inspect that over time. And, you know, our concern is that as time moves on, the potential for future and large-scale leaks increases. So we're trying to do all of this really to prevent a disaster.
And how much should the public be concerned with this? And I know your letter solicited and encouraged people to attend these meetings that are being held, and I'll give the dates to them. That is one of your concerns as well, right? You're encouraging people to actually go. And what should they be focusing on or sharing with the legislators and the decision makers in this process?
I believe, you know, that they should take a good look at the ALC and ESSO's statement of work. The bottom line is we want to keep our water clean and prevent large-scale releases out of this facility, especially since the military is very clear that they want to continue to use it. So we have to protect the environment. So it is very technical and challenging for people to understand, and we struggle with that too. But I think one area that there could be a more improvement on the ALC and SOW is the public involvement aspects of it, which seems to amount to about one sentence in the SOW. And it doesn't look like the public will have a chance to see what's happening there on the studies, and get a chance to comment on the full report.
Now, and reading the AOC, and I'm jumping around from document to document, the AOC, I didn't see in it where it even spoke of you, at what stage would you or your agency receive the sampling that was going to be, that is being proposed, the results of the samplings. When and where will you get and how? Because in the past, earlier, I've learned that they weren't providing you with many of the documents, they being DOH and what have you, if I recall, as I'm doing my research. When are you going to be receiving the results of these tests and monitoring and updated?
That's a very good question. There is some reference to us in the statement of work as being one of the subject matter experts, I guess, since we're the water utility and we're very familiar with groundwater. But beyond that, it doesn't really specify it clearly how we're going to be engaged in this process.
Mm-hmm. And from my standpoint, I believe, knowing what I see, there's so much disjointed effort here this is my comment, not yours. But what I've been researching, I've gotten thousands of documents. I've reviewed everything that the state claims they had up until the time of that spiel and some afterwards. And I just don't see openness. I, as an indicator, is that I invited them to come on, which would be able to give, you could speak and they could speak and we could come up with more information for the public. They've declined. So my personal concerns are this is a continuation of a process that's lethargic and lazy. Because first of all, who would have sighted 20 tanks on top of an aquifer anyway with minimal, in my opinion, now that I see what could have been done, who would have sighted that on top of an aquifer, knowing it's an island community, without taking extreme measures? Do you believe that the classified nature of this facility provided them an opportunity to just do things without taking the necessary precautions that we're asking for today?
I think when the facility was built, the regulations and knowledge of the resources are probably a lot less than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But given that, even the facility, remember, was declassified, I think, in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there should be a lot more openness, and we would hope that the Navy, Department of Health, and EPA are more open to sharing the information freely with the public and with us.
Mm-hmm.
We have been really expending a lot of efforts to try to get this information, and our results have been kind of mixed.
Mm-hmm.
But Carol, the main point I want to stress to the purpose of our letter was I felt it very important that all of our customers understand the situation at Red Hill, because at the end of the day, if we are impacted, and it could be 10 years from now, it could be 20 years from now, there could be an earthquake and a large release, at the end of the day, until we can recover the cost from the federal government, the cost will have to be borne by our customers.
Mm-hmm.
Through our water rates, because that's our only source of funds, major source of funds that we use to operate and maintain the system. So any treatment systems that would have to be installed to keep these wells running would be at our cost. And that's what's important for our community to understand. And what we're talking about here is not just the present. It's about talking about protecting our future and the future for our children, our families, for generations to come. Fuel release of a large scale here at Red Hill could have an impact over decades. We're dealing with fuel contamination issues in Central Oahu from agriculture, large scale agriculture in the past. And here we are about 30 years down the road after first discovering it, and we're still dealing with that and having to pay for the treatment of that water.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that to happen at Red Hill.
Right. And with this, I read an article in Star Advertising that says, quote, the water in Red Hill area is safe. And you don't have to comment on this if you don't like to. But isn't that being a bit disingenuous when they say it's safe, playing loose with words? Because we're concerned with constituents from petroleum products in the water. Isn't that correct? So shouldn't we just define and present the numbers and the sampling results rather than quantifying it as safe or unsafe? Because my concern and a practice that goes on within the state health department is that they deal with EALs, environmental action levels. But the problem with that is that they can be easily erased and increased. So, for example, they're playing loosely with it's safe or the limits and above DOH, but the SSRL is site specific. So when in fact, naphthalene, for example, they've indicated that there are no contaminants in some of the wells, but they failed to mention openly naphthalene, methyl naphthalene. What do you say about that? Any comment?
Carol, I don't think I'm too far from where your concern is on this. we noticed that, keep in mind that the aquifer above which, below which this is underlying this facility is pristine. It has no fuel contaminants in it. And it's a drinking water quality where you can just drill a well and be able to pump it out, and maybe just with a little disinfection and chlorination, you can provide it to our customers. But now with the chemicals that are in there, and they're documented based on the actual water quality data from the monitor wells that's been drilled and tested, sampled and tested by the Navy, that there is clearly petroleum contamination, their constituents there in the groundwater. So, yeah, I guess if you were to think about it, I wouldn't necessarily drill a drinking water well right next to this facility at this point, because I know I'm going to pump up some fuel contaminants in it. So it's really kind of impacted the section of the aquifer. The EALs, yeah, we do have concerns about the health department's approach with the EALs, which seems to be a kind of a risk management approach. We prefer to say if it's drinking water quality, there should be no fuel contaminants in the drinking water aquifer.
And for example, let me make sure so that they tend to get a little whiny after you say things, and instead of speaking up front, they whine after the fact. You said, well, this is what I would say. You say it's safe, but then you say you failed them openly. You talk about naphthalene, not you, Ernest, but the state health department and the EPA, I believe, is just sitting in the background orchestrating the chess master to protect the Navy and failing to hold their feet to the fire, because the EPA should have been monitoring this. They had knowledge of this. And, for example, the oily pits and the 3.1 million gallons that spilled way back. There's tar bubbling out of the ground right there in Jalapa today. And so EPA is just simply missing in action, and this action to come in and create this AOC at, with the advice and of EPA and working with the Navy and excluding you doesn't bode well. But again, naphthalene, for example, there is no safe drinking water level recognized by the EPA. They should go ahead and do something about that, or determine or consider it an agent of concern, right? Because naphthalene, if I recall right, was the same material used in mothballs. Am I correct?
Yes.
And that naphthalene, I suspect, what I did read in some areas, that this naphthalene was to use, methyl naphthalene 2 and D or whatever, that were used to kill off bacteria that grows in diesel oils and what have you. So if that is in the water, there's something wrong, and they should quantify that.
Carol, just for your information, and we've been pretty open about this, we are going to be commissioning a health effects study, a toxicological study.
You are?
Yes, because nobody, as far as we can tell, nobody has actually done this. We could be wrong, and maybe there are reports that have been done in the past that we have not been able to get a copy of, but in the meantime, we're not waiting. We are going to be doing our own toxicological study and be sharing the results with our community and with the regulators.
This is exactly why I said what I said about the EPA, because this is RCRA, and it's a release. And EPA seems to be more protective of the military, and the DOH is just simply going along. I mean, because at one time they were biting at the ankles of the Navy, and then all of a sudden the Navy has them in his lap, so to speak. And that's just wrong when we're dealing with an irreplaceable resource, a resource that I didn't know until I read your letter conclusively, that the water taken from the aquifer in the Jalapa Valley area in this area also supplies drinking water for Hawaii Kai, too. A portion of it. Oh, I don't know what portion, but
the water can reach all the way out to Hawaii Kai. It's pumping Halawa, like I mentioned, Halawa Shaft and our Moana Loa wells help supply water to Honolulu. And the Honolulu system is very interconnected all the way out to Hawaii Kai.
Yeah.
So, Carol, you know, I want to be diplomatic here. I would say that the Department of Health and EPA have been working hard to try to negotiate out the AOC and S&W. We are going to be providing official comments on suggestions to improve the ALC and SMW to address our concerns. But since the regulators have determined that this is the process they would like to follow at this time, you know, we are going to provide our input into that process.
Right, and I'm actually practicing diplomacy now. It's called accountability, and it's called just reflecting the truth. And if you look at the AOC, for example, it talks about parties and bound finding of fact in item 4.
Yeah.
And you go on down there, and it just as an example, I believe if you read this carefully, this document should be thrown to the wind, and then you and others should be brought into the fold immediately. That way, we don't have to wait until what they find and include you, because time is of the essence, and money is important. So why do it that backwards when, in fact, what violation? They are the regulators, but what's it going to violate? Will it cripple the process by having you sitting in the meetings abreast of it and apprised of it as it unfolds?
Of course, if given that opportunity, we would be glad to be there in all meetings and discussions. But, you know, keep in mind that, I sound like a broken record. We can't regulate the Navy.
I fully understand.
But we can provide our manalo and our input into ways to improve the process here.
But
we'd be glad to participate.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, looking at the diplomacy that you speak about and reading from the AOC, the Honolulu Board of Water Supply is a lava shaft, which is part of a public water system, is near the facility. The BWS Mauna Loa well, which is part of the public water system, is near the facility. The first report, Navy, of this is what troubles me. The first report by Navy to DOH of a release from the facility occurred in November 10, 1998, when petroleum-stained basalt cores were discovered beneath the tanks. Well, that's not true. There were other spills prior to that, and that's one.
Mm-hmm.
Two, in the early 2000s, Navy performed transverse cores beneath each tank and discovered evidence of staining beneath 19 of the 20 tanks. Q. On December 9, 2013, Navy placed one of the tanks, Tank 5, at the facility back into service after it had undergone routine scheduled maintenance. The maintenance work consisted of cleaning, inspecting, and repairing multiple sites within the tank. Upon placing Tank 5 back into service, Navy commenced filling the tank with petroleum. On January 13, 2014, Navy discovered a loss of fuel from Tank 5 and immediately notified DOH and the EPA. On January 13, 2014, Navy began transferring fuel from the Tank 5. So, anyway, it goes on. The transfer of the fuel from Tank 5 was completed, and Navy verbally notified the EPA and state Tank 5. Navy provided written. The total amount released to the environment, both attribute to the January 24, 19, and historical event release, is unknown. You hear what I'm saying? The total amount. We stuck on 27,000. But the Navy, in this AOC, which is a finding of fact, is saying we really don't know what the volume of fuel was dumped in there. Am I correct? Well, I mean, it's
that's what's stated in the AOC. If you ask me if I agree that we have enough data that could provide a better estimate, I think there might be better.
Yeah, and that's what
more information that we currently don't have all the information.
Right, and that's why, you know, it sounds like we're rough and, you know, trying to hustle someone on this end. But the reality is this finding of fact and this agreed document, this where they're going to, it's the Bible of this situation, then they should have their facts. And 19 cores found on the 19 tanks, and they only cleared one. I don't see anything where they did any sampling or testing of the other 18 tanks. See, it's that kind of information that causes me concern in speaking to the diplomacy.
Carol, I don't disagree with that. I think just to kind of give you a preview, one of my concerns is this findings of fact may be incomplete.
Thank you.
It doesn't accurately reflect the entire history of the facility.
And this is why should we be so concerned and demanding that they have, as one is, this is a source of drinking water. It's about human health and human concerns and you know, and the environment. So, and also, we just have an obligation to do what's right. I mean, double lining the tank should have been done a long time ago. I mean, I'm sorry, but we know that leaking, they have tests that show how degraded and to they can anticipate or, I get what's the term? There's an equation they use, and it was going to be 0.1 something thickness. It would the metal was being eaten up or corroded.
Yeah, because of corrosion, you know, I guess they're you're allowing it to go to 1/10 of an inch thick.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it's a quarter inch, so that's 0.25. Go down to 1/10 of an inch, and then they will just in time slap another piece of metal and weld it over that spot.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm just concerned with the, those aspects. But with your letter, and what should the people, would you suggest, people from Hawaii Kai? I noticed you sent it to the people in Hawaii Kai as well, correct?
Yes, actually, Carol, I sent it to all of our customers, around 170,000 customer accounts. So everybody on the island received this letter.
Okay.
That gets water service from the Board of Water Supply.
And you're encouraging them to go to this meeting.
I'm encouraging them to go to the meeting, or at least, you know, stay informed and educated about this, because we have about 5 recommendations there for them. Attend the community meeting, review the ALC, contact their elected officials and let them know that they're concerned about this issue, and stay informed by tracking bills in the legislature or attending any future community forums. The legislature did reauthorize, I think, a task force led by the health department on the Red Hill and other underground facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And help, you know, build awareness by, you know, sharing this information with their family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
So those are our recommendations to our customers, our requests for their COCOA to help us on this issue.
Let's see if this is a person with a question for you.
Okay.
Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, one question. What do you think should be done that these tanks be inactivated and reconstruct these tanks somewhere else on the island where it won't be a threat to the groundwater supply? Is that sounds to me as the ultimate solution, which calls millions and millions of dollars, and where would you relocate all these huge tanks? I'll listen to your guests. Thank you.
Carol, I could barely hear the question.
He's saying what, given the cost, it was long-winded, given the cost and what have you, mm-hmm. about replacing the tanks and what have you, and where else could you locate them? That was an option.
That's an option for actually the Navy and Department of Defense to determine what is the most cost-effective or feasible alternatives to Red Hill. Definitely, if you remove all the fuel from the facility, you reduce the future risk. Then you just deal with cleanup of the existing contamination from past leaks.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you relocate, and how much are you willing to pay? Or is it all going to be in Hawaii? Will it be in other locations in the Pacific? That is purely a Department of Defense call on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know they have done, at least to our knowledge, 2 different studies on alternatives for Red Hill, which included some recommendations on double lining and composite wall construction, both in 1998 and 2008.
Mm-hmm. I watched this whole process called environmental regulatory process in the state of Hawaii. And it's rare to see someone being slapped on the hands or taken to action and held accountable. We engage in consent decrees. While this one is not a consent decree, it's just same function. It's to impede the public's access and understanding of this, and they're going to give us limited information, as they've done for the many years. And in turn, you are a professional agency. You are the user of these waters, it's your kuleana, and yet you're being peripherally marginalized. I'm you know, here's one, for example, what bothers me about in Section 4 of the EPA conclusion on the, and determination. It says EPA has determined that the Navy and DLA's handling, storage, treatment, transportation, or disposal of solid waste may present an imminent and substantial endangerment of health or the environment. Well, if it's already in the ground and they don't know the volume, why on earth are we saying it may at this point? You see, this brings me back to the stage to say I believe something's wrong here. They need to can this one, write it better, author it better, include you in the process, and I think we would have eliminated this because they wouldn't be using the term suggesting that it may be contaminated. It is contaminated. They know that. This is what came about with this AOC.
Carol, back around middle of last year, we made a suggestion based on our review and actually had a chance to visit Kirtland and go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where at the Kirtland Air Force Base, there was a large fuel release that occurred maybe over a 50-year period and was moving underground toward the drinking water wells of that utility. We used the word site characterization. We felt and we recommended from last year that the Navy take and the regulators seem to take action to characterize what is already there. And part of site characterization also includes creation like a conceptual site model, drilling out numerous monitor wells to actually determine the location or extent of the of contamination, and also the depth in the aquifer, because it's not only floating on the surface. When it becomes dissolved, when petroleum dissolves, you can actually move deeper into the aquifer. And in New Mexico, it moved quite deep into the aquifer.
Uh-huh.
You almost have to create a three-dimensional model of the contamination of under and around that facility. And that'll give you an idea, a better idea, I think, on where it's moving.
Right. And you've got to stay on top of it. And they don't give the types of monitoring or how frequent. I think it's too casual, but...
And you keep in mind that the monitor wells, and the Navy has also got an interest in the groundwater resources in the area because their Red Hill Shaft pumping station, I believe, supplies around 20% of Joint Base Pearl Harbor and Hickam potable water needs.
Yeah.
So the monitor well system that was put in the 2000s was seemed to be geared toward tracking contaminant flow toward their drinking water source and not so much looking at flow to the north or flow to the south.
Mm-hmm. I think that what I would suggest to the listeners out there and the public, attend these meetings and request, be polite about it, you know, whatever you want, however you do it in the island style, and ask that Board of Water Supply be allowed to participate. We know you're not regulatory. We get all of that. But you are the main concern, and it is people's health, and you're the first step in people's health being degraded or jeopardized. But one of the other problems that I found in this this situation was this AOC. This is how ludicrous I believe. What leads me to think that this is just a big shabai and it's to cover the butts of the Navy and the EPA is going along orchestrating it. Here, five. The action required by this AOC may be necessary to protect the health and the environment. I'm sorry, but these are educated people. This is a legal action being taken. It's a finding of fact, and there's no need to use the term it may impact the health of humans.
Right.
I'm sorry. This thing is so loosely. It's really troublesome, and to know that combining all these facts that your agency is not involved in the critical access or the point of processing this and reviewing and participating, and you'll get it like we get it when they feel like we should after it's been cleansed or sanitized. I don't believe that's right. I believe that common sense should prevail here. You should have front row seat participating in that as just as an observer, if nothing else. You should be able to, because they're going to be finding things and you're going to be inclined to go spend more money testing when, in fact, it may not be necessary to test if you were privy to their reports or their findings or their samplings in a timely fashion. That's just me speaking.
So I appreciate your opinion on this. We're trying to be careful with our customers' funds, but we also know that we, like you mentioned, time is of the essence. We don't want to wait until the disaster happens and we're picking up in our well. So early warning, possibly trying to remove or contain the plume are actions that we recommend.
What are some of the technologies? Let's say if there's a plume discovered, how would you as an agency react? Would it be your cost? If, let's just say, you do samplings show up, and hopefully it's timely, because at this pace, they may give it to you a year later, because there's this process where the Navy has a right to say that they don't want certain things disclosed, and then it's reviewed and looked at, and on and on and on. So the time is of the essence, but then dollars and cents. If you were provided this information timely and there was a discovery of a plume, what could you initiate? What actions could you take, because the science that's available, to prevent it from getting into your wells?
It would depend also on the type of contaminants that we're looking at, because the treatment technologies are very targeted. Depending on the type of contaminant, their efficiency or effectiveness varies. But different methods have been used elsewhere that we're aware of. In the unsaturated zone below the ground, that's above the water table, they've used soil vapor extraction. And that's one method that's, I think, currently being used at a contamination Superfund site out in central Oahu. The other way is that's being looked at in Kirtland is actually interceptor wells that are drilled close to the plume to actually begin to capture that plume and pump it out and then treat that water as it's being pumped out. Treatment can include air GAC, use of activated carbon, or air stripping technologies, but it really depends on concentrations, types of contaminants.
Who would be responsible for that expense? If
ultimately, you know, I got to say the source of the contamination or the polluter that's responsible, the responsible party should bear the cost.
And
that's a principle of this type of regulation.
So. Yeah, that's normal. The generator of the waste is held accountable. But in the interim, that process, are they going to step up to the plate and say immediately when it's discovered, okay, Board of Water Supply, it's our responsibility. Here's $6 million or $4 billion or whatever it takes to go and prevent this from migrating further, or to eradicate the growth of the bacteria or whatever the plume is. And you understand? It leaves you exposed and leaves the public exposed to guesswork. I'm sorry, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, I appreciate your opinion.
Yeah.
I agree with you that it should be the generator of contamination.
But immediately, and that's what I was looking at this AOC, and we're dealing with a number of uncertainties and a number of unknowns, and in this AOC it should speak to that. If, in fact, a critical situation develops, then immediately we'll call them the violator, that's what the leaker of the spill of the Navy, of the Department of Navy, shall immediately have a fund or have a set aside monies now in case as a response fee to get out there immediately, right? Not because you know how government works, right?
You know, Carol, I don't disagree with your observation there that this process seems to be a very linear and long, slower process, and the question is, if this is executed, what is the ability to react to new information, new situations, and react quickly without waiting years for something to actually get done? But keep in mind that the issue here, whatever the recommendations from the studies come out, will be the obtaining federal appropriations through Congress.
Right, but you know, like I say,
that could be a very slow process.
Well, it's like watching rocks grow, and that's my concern. There should certain things should be assigned an importance, a level of importance, and that is, this is a drinking water of thousands of people, And so can we be loose with this? We've already had our, they've had the time to play loosely and give us bits and pieces of information and what have you. That game should cease, and we should move to a better one and to exclude you. And we'll encourage the listeners out there to go in and request that you, your agency, though it's not regulatory, but we're not talking trade secrets here. We're talking about an entity that will be impacted. You first, then the people second. But you are representing the people because you're delivering a clean water to them, a safe water. So this shouldn't be considered their trading secrets. This should be their word about the health and welfare of the environment and the people. So anyway, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing with me or the listeners out there. And what is there anything else that you want to share with us before we go?
Our listeners can go to our website, BoardOfWaterSupply.com, and right there in the front, in the middle of that webpage, you'll see a reference to Red Hill. And you can click on that and get more information. It also provides some links to the EPA and Health Department's websites. And just for information, you know, if you look as part of the ALC and SLW, there's an administrative record which contains over 390 plus documents.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at what we can do to actually make that information available online.
Now, here's one of the concerns I have with this is that these are people that are just drinking water. Though they're educated and some are rich and some are not, we need, for them to ask for certain things here, they need to know what it is. So read this 300 and some page document or this AOC, for example, and they're going to be commenting on that. You'd have to know this jargon, first of all, and the acronyms. So that in itself is disingenuous because there should have been an effort to educate the public as this thing unfolded, but instead we're told now the ignorant people have 30 days to respond.
Yeah, I believe the Department of Health and EPA has given a 30-day comment period up to July 1st, comments in by July 1st. Carol, if I could add, if you look at some of the discussions and the task force minutes and report, there is, we clearly kind of pointed this out, the need to provide information in an understandable format to our customers, to the public.
Right. And I have a little background in this, and I still don't know what I'm reading, to be honest with you, because it's really catchy when you're referring to one well and one well head and what have you. One second here. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Hello, Carol.
Hello.
You know, I'm just learning about the blue line.
Okay.
And the underwater injection control line.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I'm not mistaken, isn't that blue line supposed to be that demarcation as to what can and cannot be mulca of it? And aren't these fuel cells mulca of that blue line?
Eric, can you respond to that? You have your radio on, ma'am?
Nope, it's off.
Okay, go ahead, Ernest.
Okay, thank you, Carol and Connor. Very good observation. The entire Red Hill facility is above the underground injection control line that's established by the Department of Health, and also the pass and no-pass line. It is over the drinking water aquifer.
Caller, did that answer your question?
No, I didn't get that.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. The Red Hill fuel tanks are above or mouka of the UIC line, the underground injection control line. You're correct.
Okay, so that should be a serious concern then.
Yes. I don't know. I don't believe the UIC line was in place when the facility was built, but definitely it is located above it.
Okay. So because it is a mulca of the blue line, of the UIC line, then shouldn't we be considering developing, creating, building new fuel cells that are Mackay of it, the way that it's supposed to be? Because we're talking about the future. And so we don't need our future water system to be contaminated to where it's not usable, because the Pearl Harbor aquifer is where most of the water comes from.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's very serious, and is that brought up, is that point raised in the report, which I have not read? I know very little about this other than what the newspaper has provided us, and I have not read all of that information either.
Ma'am, I don't believe it's mentioned explicitly in the administrative order and consent or the statement of work. It might come out as one of the result recommendations or alternatives under the studies that they're going to commission. And you're right. Actually, this is an obvious alternative that they need to look at.
Well, to me, that's very concerning.
Over an area that won't threaten the groundwater and drinking water aquifer.
Right. So for me, it's very concerning that you're not more alarmed, or maybe I'm just not getting that sense of alarm that I would expect from you, who is there to protect and, you know.
Well, let me inject this. I think you. I would say, and I like to complain about everybody into it, but I would say suggest that this one, caller, is a little misplaced. He is the only one that dared to speak up early on. The other guys will drink the Kool-Aid. The state health department has had documents and hadn't shared them with them. So I think we should focus. If there's any criticism, I think Mr. Lau's organization and agency is in the same place that we are. He just have a greater burden.
And I totally appreciate
right.
that he is
so
with
if I could help you ask you, you know, get at him too, but please don't be reluctant or hesitate to give the same demand of the state health department and the EPA
right.
because they are really to blame for this. They are the regulators. And,
exactly.
you know, they run to the scene now with all of these great ideas, but when in fact they were supposed to be, because this is an underground storage tank, so they should have been by rules and by law monitored on a routine basis, and they were. So the health department sat on their haunches. So I'm not defending Mr. Lau or his agency, but let's make sure the listeners out there understand this is squarely
it's not a personal attack.
Right.
It's more about the Board of Water Supply as a whole, as our local entity, to include the State Department
right.
of Health, to include the federal EPA. So, yes, we do need to let our elected officials know about our concern. So, Mr. Lau, when are you coming to YNI?
Ma'am, is this the chair from YNI Neighborhood Board?
No, we we have a new board, and they're going to meet the first Tuesday in July. So at that point, they will elect their chairman. Let me
intervene here. I'm going to be down on my last couple of seconds. Can you folks hold on for a minute?
Sure.
Thank you. Hold on. I got to go to a news break. Hello.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Thank you, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I have Mr. Ernest Lau, he's the chief engineer for the Board of Water Supply, and a couple of guests here, and we'll continue.
Go ahead, caller. Finish up your comments or questions to Mr. Lau from YNI.
Yes. So when is the YNI meeting?
I don't know when the neighborhood board meeting is scheduled for July, but I know the previous caller mentioned about us going out. We would be glad to attend and share our understanding of the situation at Red Hill with the YNI neighborhood board or any other neighborhood board. We'd also suggest that it would be great to have the health department and possibly the Navy also attend.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, so please send an invitation to me or to Keone Matos at our office, our communications office, and we'd be glad to come out.
Okay, will do. And again, I apologize if I seemed in an attack mode.
No, you're not. No problem, ma'am.
I'm glad you're concerned. You know, that's a real good, that's a positive. We need people to be concerned and keep abreast of the situation.
Awesome.
You're
so
definitely
look forward to that meeting.
You're not offending anyone. It's just that I want to make sure that the public understands that this document, it has been my experience, and I have quite a bit of it now, that this is yet another ruse, and because you have to involve the Board of Water Supply.
Yes.
Give them an integral role in this. You cannot treat them as if they're at the back of the bus and only involved when we want them to. They are. It's critical that they be involved from the beginning. You understand, and I know they're not regulatory and they have no say, but this is important here. No one should be excluded in this process. And even the public, you know, this so-called task force. I've learned, I'm fearful of task force in this town because they are predisposed when they engage many other occasions. So in this one here, Mr. Louse wrote this letter, and I was absolutely floored. I mean, it's like, and I applaud you, too, for at your meeting, at the legislative meetings, you actually spoke out and suggested that there'll be a closer look and that this be taken with greater, more importance or something. Marcia, you have a comment?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Lau, for being with us all morning. Two things. One, at the hearing at the Capitol last year, Senator Gabbard's hearing, Carol sent all the legislators tons and tons of material. And I sat there, and the man from the military asked me why was I there. You know, what, and I had to tell him I asked for this hearing. That's number one. And number two, it was clear that the legislators had not read the material that Carol sent. The only person that asked really good questions was Representative Thielen, and she was the only one we didn't send material to. They bought what the military said, hook, line, and sink. They didn't ask decent questions, and it was clear that the military was going to have their way. And as far as asking the Board of Water Supply, as a vital member of this, I was amazed that there were no questions, or very few. And then, my next thing is, have you tasted the water at Tripler, which is right above those towels? It's horrible. It is the worst tasting stuff. Please go taste it. I don't know what's in it.
We'll take your word for it.
it's just awful. And so, when you have sick people right there, newborns drinking that water, what in the world is going on?
Well, Matt, thank you. I think I remember meeting you last March at the hearing.
Yes, we did.
I'm just really happy that an agency stands up, and this letter just changes the whole environment here in that. Why am I excited about this? Because when I first engaged and started getting documents, I discovered that they had everything loaded on a computer because of my UIPA request. But in reading that, there was thousands of documents and books and what have you. And I went through every one. But then I noticed in this process, this is at the health department, I noticed that there were several portions of that missing. And they claimed there were none. Then I read more and says, no, it has to be because you even make reference to it in these. So you clearly know that they exist. Oh, by just some chance, they found them and someone else had them. Well, come on, you know, first of all. Then secondly, have you provided any of this information to the Board of Water Supply? No, because
we got them and I overlooked them. I didn't know what was in the documents. Well, there's one person operating the UST underground storage tank program now. So this is why I suggest that I don't want to mix, give an impression that Mr. Lau is, I'm working for him or he agrees with me. These are my own statements, my own opinions. I simply submit that based on what I know and how they've handled this, the public should trust absolutely nothing. This thing should be trash can and redone because the Navy has been disingenuous, the EPA has been quiet and manipulative, and apologetic. If you look at all of their consents, they're the same thing. We got brownfield sites here, and we still stuck with the pollutants. We just covered them with asphalt. Is that what we want? Is that what we need in this state? So, again, we've had bad comments about border water supply here, but in this one, you got my trust, love, and support on this one because this is the only hope we have for any sensibility, any sensible approach to this.
Well, can I ask a question? With the growth of new housing developments, especially in that area, what does this foretell of that use of water, the new demand for water? What are we talking about here? Is it safe? What's going on?
We test the five wells that are closest to Red Hill every quarter, and we test for a large number of petroleum contaminants, and we haven't detected any at this point. The new housing developments, we do have capacity in our system to account for the new housing developments, and we work closely with the Department of Planning and Permitting to make sure that we give them feedback on adequacy of resources to service these areas. The impact, however, the concern is on the long term, if we lost the capacity of the pump out of this aquifer and had to abandon certain wells, we really have to take a hard look at our capability to handle the new growth at that point. It's hard to say what form it will take. But it was something we'll have to reevaluate because our Halaba Shop is one of our largest sources in our system.
Hey, you being an engineer, Mr. Lau, if you could, if you don't have any response to this or maybe give me a little insight. Okay, if this material, we see constituents that are associated with petroleum in the wells. When was that and how fast is it migrating? I know there are many things that dictate how things move, the fluctuation of water levels and the basalt or what have you. But when are they guessing or have they bothered to guess when this that is being seen now, when was it introduced and to migrate that distance? Am I making sense?
I think in one of their reports, maybe it was their groundwater protection plan back in 2008, they did make some kind of estimates based on their modeling of the groundwater and the flow or movement of the contaminants that if they got within a certain level of a certain constituent, I think it was, what was it, benzene or naphthalene, within their Red Hill pumping station that they would begin to pick it up in the station and might exceed the maximum contaminant level of that drinking water source. But that was the only information we saw in any of the reports. There was no real analysis of the movement of contaminants toward our Halaba Shaft or Mauna Loa wells. And that's our efforts right now. And because of our concerns about that, I believe it sounds like the Navy may actually be doing studies to look at that.
But again, it would give us an idea of how should you be ready to respond, because if it's spilled just in January of 2014 and we find it has migrated down to well number or what have you, that's cause for alarm. But if it's something that spilled 30 years ago, then that says that you have a little time.
Then that's why I keep on kind of going back basically a network of monitoring wells that's drilled around the facility, around Red Hill fuel tanks facility. to better define what is actually there, what are the concentrations, and how fast it might be moving. And that's what they did in Kirtland, the Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico.
Here's what disturbs me about this AOC. In the beginning of it, we're just going to call ES2. This is one of the things that jumped out at me and says, you know, this is a booger bear. And this is, they're just simply not doing what's necessary to really address it. Concentrations of 1-methylnaphthalene, 2-methylnaphthalene, and naphthalene in RHMWO2 show an increasing trend since March 5th, 2014. But remain below historic maximums detected in the well. All other analytical results were generally consistent with historical data. So, trend, when you're using the term trend, that's excitable for me because something's going on there. It's a trend. What's happening? How do we check it? How do we monitor it? How do we mitigate it? Or do they just know that the best thing to do is put it to sleep through this AOC and cover it up and have a consent decree that leave Border Water Supply holding the bag, because ultimately they will either have to shut it down or continue to give you water that is now contaminated or mitigated. And where's the money coming from? The public?
Yeah, ultimately Congress, the federal budget should fund these improvements and mitigation actions. You're right that Monitor Well Number 2 that was actually located in the lower access tunnel, very close to the bottom of tank number 5. It did see an increase when we actually graphed out the test data that we got through the Department of Health from the Navy. That it seemed to correlate that when the leak occurred back in January of 2015, we also saw an increase in that groundwater monitoring well levels for diesel and other constituents.
So based on the groundwater monitoring results of, and the reported release of, at Tank 5 in January of 2014, continued groundwater monitoring at the wells inside RHSF tunnel is recommended. Are they doing that?
We're not sure, actually. We don't get all the information. We think they are, but we can't confirm that.
Well, I equate this to the allied forces fighting together, and someone says, well, you join our allied forces, and we're going to go get the enemy. But they say, well, we're not going to tell you who the enemy is right now. We're not going to tell you what they look like, how many there are, where they are. But we'll call you when we, if we need you, or we'll give you information, and then the enemy pops up. In this case, it's in the drinking water. You're now holding the baby, in, you know, and you have the burden as an agency. I would think there is a liability there, and you shouldn't have to bear that or be responsible for that when it could be prevented.
I agree with you. And, Carol, I think that's why, you know, it's very important for our community, the public, our customers, folks like yourself, to vocalize their concerns or put it in as part of testimony to be submitted to the Health Department and EPA to hopefully make this a better process that will address everybody's concerns.
Now, my question is, do they actually read these things? So often, it's been my experience over the years that no matter what people, the public testifies and sends in, there's a decision that has already been made, and they just say thank you to the public. Do we have any assurance that it's going to make a difference?
Ma'am, I can't speak on behalf of the Health Department or EPA. We definitely are going to make our opinions known to them in writing. And it's important, I think, for people to do it verbally, orally, and also in writing, so it becomes part of the record.
Let me ask you this, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but this is such a, in my experience here in this town, this is a unique occasion. What prompted you, other than ethics and morals and values, what prompted you to just come out and say the things and request and not speak in the same chorus that the State Health Department and the EPA was Why did you come forward with this? What is it? I mean, it's probably rhetorical, but could you to share with us?
Well, Carol, and I remember very, very clearly that meeting, that hearing that was there before six committees of the legislature in March of 2014, sitting there and listening to the presentations by the Navy and the Health Department, I realized that, and it's one of the reasons I have come back to the Board of Water Supply, we're here to work for our community. We have the trust, public trust responsibility and the stewardship responsibility for our freshwater resources on this island. And we need to ensure that for our future generations. And how would I look at my children's face and even maybe someday my grandchildren if I didn't do what I needed to do there? So I made a difficult decision during the course of that hearing just to speak up and say, and tell it like it is, that this is an imminent and a serious threat to the groundwater resources, that something needs to be done right away.
Uh-huh. Well,
I appreciate everything you've done, Mr. Lau. Mike, I guess my question is, have you had any pushback from the other side? Any, well, yeah, let's say pushback. Let's be nice about it. Have they really done anything to you or threats to you?
If they did, it didn't work.
we remain undeterred. I would say that there's been no threats, but I would say there have been challenges getting information from the respective parties. But we don't give up.
Carlo, yes, go ahead. You have a comment or question for Mr. Lau?
Actually, no, I have an experience I'd like to share. I think we all remember when we had the 40 days and nights of rain quite a few years ago. My neighbor actually worked for the water board, and at that time, he confidentially spoke to me about what the department was doing for the safety of the water. They had increased the levels of chlorine and just a myriad of chemicals to purify the water that were very, very toxic to human beings. So I'm concerned with, I applaud what you're doing and I'm behind you, but to wait until the government decides or that they're going to do something is too perilous. I believe everybody needs to get a really good water purifier, for their own safety, no matter what happens with this, you know, with this inquiry that you're starting. I think it's too late. I think the water's been contaminated. I don't think we have enough water for the myriad amounts of tourists that we have coming in. I don't think Hawaii can maintain that need for water. And I would encourage the new generation coming up to really go into the field of testing for pollutants so that we don't have to wait for the government to, or EPA or whatever to tell us what's in our water. We need to have agencies that are run by the people and that, so we have the evidence, because waiting on the government and asking them, I'm a government worker, it's not going to work.
Yeah, well, we're not waiting on the government. This show doesn't wait on the government. So
I know you don't. I know you don't.
We're saying, and I agree with you, do all of that, but then what's in place now is a system that takes the main user of this water, the Board of Water Supply, who distributes to users, and then put them in exile or simply ostracize them and move forward while talking about protecting. They may be interested in protecting the health and welfare of the humans and the environment. That is ludicrous. So that's why we're having this show, to say that enough is enough, and we'll train the kids to and buy more Brita or whatever it is that you buy, or zero water. But the reality is, whatever they're testing, it's still, there's a source that's being constantly contaminated. So We have to work on both ends. So I agree with you 100%. But
I support what you're doing too. I'm just concerned that people are waiting for something to happen, and it's too late. Our water is contaminated, and we need to protect the populace. I remember one of the things that the water board guys told me is that they were putting lye in the water. If you can believe that.
L-Y-E.
Ma'am, I actually have Mr. Erwin Kawata here with me. He's the head of our water quality division. Erwin, would you like to comment on that?
Hi, everyone. We don't put lye in our water supply. Lye causes it to be basic. We don't add that. The only thing that we're adding is chlorine for purposes of disinfection.
And while we're at it, you know, you do know that the military put fluoride in their wells, right, in their where they draw the water from. Case you want to learn something. That's nothing to do with border water supply, but for the lady that was asking the question.
You know, God bless you. I pray that you're telling the truth. I'm going to sign off. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Well, go ahead, Mr. Lau, if you have any more comments.
No, I just wanted to thank you, Carol, for the opportunity to be on your show. We'd be glad to come back in the future if you'd like us. Again, I encourage our customers that may be listening, you know, please come out to the meeting on June 18th at the Malawa Middle School. It's at 6:30.
Uh-huh.
So give yourself enough time to fight the traffic and get out there. But it's very important to show up and stay educated and become part of the process.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Lau. I appreciate you joining us, and we'll talk again.
Can I ask one more thing? Can you repeat the time and place of the meeting?
Meeting location is on Thursday. Meeting's on Thursday, this coming Thursday, June 18th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Moana Lua Middle School Cafeteria, 1289 Mahi'oli Street.
Okay. It's Moana Lua Intermediate School, High School?
Middle School.
Middle School.
Okay. 1289 Mahi'oli Street.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, thank you again. And if you have anything else before you go ahead. But I really appreciate it, and thank you for putting this letter out there and encouraging people to come and speak out or have a voice.
Well, hello, Carol.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Well, guys, again, here's my stance. It's really sad that Mr. Lau have to go out, and he's a professional, and we think that the others are professional. But what I've learned in this process with the state agencies, if you trust anything that comes out of the Solid and Hazardous Waste Branch or the health department, then you have just got too much trust on your hand. Because, first of all, the military, you must understand something, and we have documents, and we've spoken to this as former Congressman Ed Case, represented Fort Island Ventures, and there was an issue at Waikele, and he stated that the military is sovereign, so the rules don't apply. And then there are many instances where the state health department will pick, if there was a violation occurring, stopping short of stopping and getting donuts and some malasadas and some flowers to go conduct an inspection, the health department would do that. It's shameful. You take Red Hill. Red Hill, there's an indictment, but it was on not Red Hill, the landfill, Waimanawa Gulch landfill. 2 men indicted, but they're employees of it, but the city don't get indicted. And then there's consent decrees. You know, the Sand Island sewage treatment plant, consent decree. The Save Our Surf Bays and Beaches, or that Surf Rider Foundation filed a lawsuit, a consent decree comes out of it. And what these consent decrees are nothing more than the health department facilitating the violators. And generally they are government agencies. And they tell you, oh, well, it's going to cost the government, and so it's going to cost too much, so we're going to work with them. No, you're going to cover it up with them, because the reality is it's going to cost somebody somewhere. So Board of Water Supply, in this instance, will probably foot the bill, and then in turn we would see increases in our rates. But again, as a caller pointed out, that we need to prepare and get samples and do that and purifiers, that's fine. But then where are you drawing that water from? But it's, again, the site description, these are the things that bother me about this AOC. And I encourage you to just tell them to start all over again with this AOC.
Carol, when these things were built in 1941, to be exact, between 1940 and 41, at a cost of $12 billion.
Okay.
In that day, a cost. Have they been updated? Have they been repaired? Have they been remodeled? Given, that's a long time, you know. So, what's the condition? Are they, I mean, we know that there's some of them that are deteriorated, but have, as a whole, have they been updated?
Well, when you say, know? Have they been updated, I mean...
Repaired or remodeled or...
Well, let's say if they were, then they still leaked. So I don't know the importance of that, but they may have. But again, one of the critical things is the monitoring. They have no methods of dependable monitoring system to alert them that there is a leak if there were whatever was remodeled, rebuilt, replenished. So that's one of the critical concerns. Secondly, double lining. And I know that when it was built, there's always the rules were different. And that's okay. But we did grow up in an era of talking about pollutants and groundwater and drinking water. And they sat on their thumbs because it was top secret. And then in the 90s when they declassified it. But again, they basically enjoyed what they're enjoying today, protection by the EPA. Look, folks, they had open tar pits, open oil pits and waste pits, and they were dumping the material straight into the Halava stream. The EPA existed then when these things were occurring, and the EPA has done nothing but sheltered. It's a sister agency. It's military.
Well, and now my question about the EPA, because we talk about the EPA, but the EPA are people. Who appoints them? How are they appointed? Where do they come from?
Well, I mean, that's okay. President Obama appointed Jackson. So she was in. She didn't do nothing. Okay. And who else he appointed, they did nothing. And the admirals, and I mean, their interest is fighting wars and getting the men and fueling the vessels and delivering goods and all. I understand all of that. But here back at home, you have the EPA. You just don't cite a site and say the hell with the health of the people in the community that it surrounds it. You wouldn't want to do that. So they had an obligation to understand all of that. But this thing about the Red Hill storage facility, 1.1 in this AOC, the RHF is located on federal government land, zone F1, and that's generally what it is. And federal, located in Halava Heights, 2.5 miles from northeast of Pearl Harbor. It is located on the low ridge of the western edge of Ko'olau Mountains range that divides Halava Valley from the Moanalua Valley. And it's bordered by a North Halava Correctional Facility and private businesses on the west by the United States America Coast Guard Reservation. So anyway, I give you that. It's a... The RHS occupies 144 acres of land, and the majority of the site is at an elevation of approximately 200 to 500 feet. So anyway, it contains, the RHS SF contains 18 active and 2 inactive USTs, that's underground storage tanks, that are operated by the Naval Supply System Command Fleet Logistics Center, or NAVSUP. And 12.5 million gallons each tank holds. The RHS is located approximately 100 feet above the basal aquifer, just 100 feet now. And they say, in this to describe it, it's about the height of the state capitol. And in there, the USTs contain jet fuel, propellant 5, JP5, jet fuel, propellant 8, JP8, and marine diesel fuel, F-76. The current status of the USTs are summarized. So anyway, I've in other shows, actually, when they initially dared to report it, the Navy has, to be honest with you, and so I can establish why I say what I say, and you can draw your own conclusion if I'm being foul-mouthed or just rude, but when I have the facts, that's the joy of being educated about matters. You can tend to say because you can draw your own conclusion based on what is presented. And in this instance, the state health department has one man trying to fight a World War 20 in this state under the USTs. It's undermanned, underfunded, number one. And then this is military. And there is a belief, and I've demonstrated this, at Hickam Air Force Base and at Kaneohe Marine Base, when there's soils exceeding the levels of chlordane and dildrin and aldrin and those things. So they tell them, you better do what's right and take care of it and do these things to prevent human health, humans interacting with it or being impacted. And then when the military decides they don't want to comply, the state health department says, oh, we have an extra pen. Erase that. Get that new eraser and erase those numbers and increase the EALs to a level. How many do you need? How many do you think will protect this? This has already been documented. There are some nice people at the health department, but this is a matter of life and death and the environment. And I'm sorry, I wish I could sit here and say I have a box of malasadas and roses for you, but it's just enough already. When you orchestrate this type of, and then you want the public to come in and comment. I mean, the average Joe asking, understanding with respect to chemical constituents associated with jet fuel, propellant, and marine diesel fuel, and to ensure the Navy remains in compliance with DOH UST release response requirements as described in Hawaii administrative rules. You, the public, is asked to do that when they are the regulators and they're giving away the shop and they're failing to regulate. And you're asked to comment. I suggest it would be my recommendation to tell them enough already. We don't like that. We want to see the border water supply. And that's kind of an insurance policy for the public, because I don't trust what is handling with Gill, how he handled it. I don't trust what Gabbard and his committee did. I don't trust, because you know why? I went through great lengths to dig and scratch and get records and spent a lot of time and gave it to them, and I doubt if they read one document.
Well, it was obvious. It was obvious at the hearing that they had not read. And I noticed that Representative Chris Lee was taking bows, and he did not read one word of all the documents you sent. It was clear. He didn't even stay for the whole hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And listening, again, listening to the questions, it was clear that they had not read and that they were siding with the military.
Yeah, it's as if all of a sudden the state becomes militarized. It becomes, mm-hmm. The EPA, if you trust anything the EPA says, as I said earlier, you just have too much trust on your hand. It's just an agency that sits back. It's a puppet master. It engages it when it should be out there enforcing and regulating, and it looks for. And by the way, if there are violations here, this thing tend to insulate. I've learned and come to expect that there will rarely be any prosecution of anybody in this process of knowingly and failing to report or anything and not taking the necessary precautions, because once they engage in this AOC, it's been common practice with the consent decree. All you did was bought protection.
Well, again, I'm back to my question about who is on that committee of the EPA. Are they local people?
Well, I don't,
are they out of state?
Supposedly it's a group of, well, when you ask what group are you talking about, the EPA is federal government.
Yeah, I know, but locally.
Well,
locally.
There is no army of EPA people here.
No local.
They send people from out of town, and it's like They sit with their baggage ready to, okay, there's another fire. Okay, who's responsible for the fire? Oh, it's a government agency. Oh, okay, get the other suitcases and the other talks, the points, because we got to go into protection mode. Okay, what are we going to do? Well, it's going to be silent treatment. We're going to give Dean Higashi a few little BS types of comments, and he's going to stand there and he's going to tell the media, who will dang sure not ask any questions probative, and then he's going to give them his line of BS, and then that's it. And as you see in the papers and everywhere else, they're hashing out the same fundamental basic nonsense, when in fact, when you're using terms like EPA has determined that the Navy and the DLA's handling, storage, treatment, transportation, or disposal of solid waste may present an imminent and substantial endangerment to human health. Why would you be so careless and cavalier with the term may, when you know it is your job as a professional agency have standards and have EALs and parts per billion? Why would they do that? When they know each constituent and its impacts, that's what the EPA does. They have doctors and they have the ATSDR agency, all of those agencies. So we're not dealing with dummies. We're dealing with people that are too smart for our own good. And they don't protect us. They don't serve us. And wouldn't it be nice that the State Health Department, who I spoke with, Stuart Yamada, and invited them to come on, would have been a good exchange, and we could have gotten some better answers, which would have contributed to or allowed for you, the listener, having a more informed opinion to then make comments on this AOC. So that's why I say what I say about this. It's a process that it is so well oiled that whenever you have big business or the military involved in this state, what happens is the machine starts up. The State Health Department lends itself to being the pansy, and then, or the patsy, or whatever you want to call it, and they show up growling and biting, and you never hear any bones crush. And then the next thing you know, oh, we're working on it. For example, when I ask about this development of the AOC and the involvement of EPA and the Navy and the workout, oh, we can't talk about that now. Boat of water supply? Well, we can't say anything right now because I heard you have completed the AOC and it's going to be circulated. Well, no, we can't make it because we're waiting for the chief to sign it. The Navy doesn't want us to let the public know. Oh, really? So who are you protecting, the State Health Department? So for those of you that got the money, no problem. You can get on the plane and fly off to some other paradise. But for those of us that are here just as human beings, you better get involved. And if for your own good, not for my good, but you better get involved. And we're seeing there's suggestions that cancer rates will increase. And not because of the water drinking, but they didn't say what. They just say they anticipate seeing more cancer. So imagine we're going to sit back and the military, in this case, is being protected. The big boys circle around, and if you'd like to, go to carolcox.com and just Google Carol Cox, and there's a couple shows on there where I read verbatim the statements and the conditions and the contaminants and the parts per billion and what was found in these wells when they were claiming there were nothing in the wells. So this isn't make-believe.
Well, now, Carol, if I plan to go to the hearing, of course, but would we, ordinary people, because I don't understand all these chemical names and things, will ordinary people understand what is being said?
Of course. You know they will. They'll go there and they'll rattle off these names and methyl ethyl naphthalene. You know that, Marcia.
I know.
You know, imagine we're all educated people, according to the State Health Department and the cover-up squad. Oh, yeah, put it out there. Oh, we didn't get many comments. You darn right, because they didn't speak that language. They didn't know where to start.
That's what I'm afraid of, is will we get ordinary language? Will we get something that we can understand?
You might get, what might happen is that you might get people interested that are in the business of sampling and abating these issues, you know, when there's contaminant. You might get a healthy number of people from that ilk, because you see, if they come and say, make these comments, we think that you should do these kind of testing. And so what generally happens is that they might agree, and then there's money generated, and then they get to put in a, you know, bid, and they get it. So you might get that. That it's an indirect way of or a benefit that we, the general public, don't know to appreciate. But I just, even me, I don't have much to say about the technical aspect of this, other than it's in the water and they're downplaying it. And it's in the water and they're not moving fast enough. Mr. Lau was saying that he wants it double line. The EPA already, there's mounds of records where they, on the oily pits and what have you, they, back then, they even told them that they knew that pits weren't lined. And then they used to burn the oil and dump it in there from the excess to cleaning and what have you. So all of this material, see, when they drain these tanks, they're using solvents and other chemicals to actually...
Where do they drain them?
Well, they have a tank, and that at one time they were pumping it into an oily pit. And if you go to carolcox.com, you can actually see pictures of the old pit. And that then they in these documents that I recovered, it states that from the pit, the oil was a lot of the runoff, and they were actually channeling a lot of it into the Halaba Stream, which then went out to Pearl Harbor. So, again, you know.
Well, when you walk along there, if you read the signs down at the marina area, and all along there, you'll see signs that say contaminated.
Right, right. And again, even that in itself is not a heavy hands approach to the state. The reason you see the more recent signs is that most of them were torn down, rusted, and I filed a complaint with the state health department. And that's why you, if you've been down in the last year, you see new signs. But there are from many anti-fouling agents in the water and contaminants and dilution runoff from not just the military now. There's homes using insecticides, pesticides, herbicides, draining down in there and contributing to that. But more specifically, this AOC, it bothers me. And it's asking people to comment, when in fact we shouldn't even be considering this as a means of a document of any integrity. So,
well, I am so proud of Mr. Lau, and I am really certain he's going to get some pushback on this.
But
one.
We don't need to. I don't like discussing it. Yes, he's going to get pushback. The devil and God may go in concert and set him on fire. I don't spend my time because it sounds like we're discouraging him. Okay, he's going to get. Were you going to serve as a bodyguard for him?
Oh no.
Okay, so
no, I don't mean that. I'm just.
We got enough
people. You know the way they act.
I know,
you
but know, we have yeah. enough people sitting on a limb, like nervous, and we don't need that. And I don't want to be the one who stimulates that. I applaud him for doing what he did. I encourage the public to go out and it's in their best interest. He's done his actions. He's put his relationships on the line. He's a professional. They may scorn him and ostracize him, but apparently he has the means of dealing with that. So we don't want to, because if we witness that and engage in that discussion, someone that might be willing to go down and participate might go, well, gee, I heard they might do Mr. Lau in, so I ain't going. I like to stay away from that. When we have enough in hand here to be clear that there is a cover up, that this AOC is an insulator, it's apologetic, it's a cover up in a worse form, because they know only they, EPA, the military, will be privy to the documents that's generated, You see, even though they're saying we're going to do this and we're going to have public hearing, whatever comes of this, only they will have access to these records. You see, and then you and I can file FOIA maybe, or we can go down there when they sanitize the records. But the reality, for example, in sampling access and document availability on page 14 of the AOC, all results of sampling, testing, modeling, or other data generated, including raw data, which shall be made available if requested by Navy and DLNA, or on Navy and DLNA's behalf during implementation of the AOC, shall be submitted to the regulatory agencies within 30 calendar days of Navy and DLA's receipt of the data. Data shall be provided in the same format that was provided to the Navy and DLA unless different. This is, let me tell you something. This is already in place in their other submittals of their monthly reports. So in other words, they just took a process that's already in place that's flawed, because the state received, had boxes of these documents. The Navy was timely in submitting them, but then the gentleman that handles it says, oh, I overlooked that. I didn't read it. You follow. So in other words, they're duping the public. These rules, these things are already in place. There's nothing new. They must declare that there's proprietary or information that they don't want disclosed on each document that they submit. And so you as a public person access, right?
Well, that's exactly where I was asking you. Even if we go through this process, will we understand what they're saying? Will they say, oh, well, we can't tell you because it's proprietary?
Well, because if you take, for example, if you were to agree with any of this, or you go and reread it, and it tells you one thing, and then it tells you the levels that it's found in, and then you go back and say, well, what is SSRBL? Oh, it complies with the SSRBL. What is that? Oh, I don't know. Well, you know, you'd have to know that it's site-specific risk-based level. But again, they're not going to hold you by the hand and tell you these things. So this is why I say it's bogged down in very bad behavior on the part of EPA. They know what they're doing. This is just a release valve and a protection built around the Navy. And we take, for example, we have the IL laundry site. They're in a consent decree on that. They're cleaning it up slowly but surely. The military. So these impacts, who really benefit from these so-called workout deals? Nobody, because it's still our government. Even the military belong to the people, in some theories, I should say. But anyway.
They just work with such reckless abandonment about everything. It's just scary.
Yeah, well,
just,
you know,
scary.
Let me give you another example. Now, when I was assaulted or attempted murder on my life, the state health department, you're not supposed to disclose who the complainant is when you call in and tip them off on a complaint. Well, this situation, the inspector went and told the people that I reported that I had reported them dumping 13 ton of calcium hydroxide. They laughed at it. Well, the party now, I file a complaint with the Attorney General's office and with the DHHL. The gentleman was evicted from the lease, but they will not take any action because the notice of violation has been written up, but for political reasons, because DHHL will look even worse because there's tons of waste and illegal substances that have been dumped there. But they don't want to take an action. But the notice of violation and the inspector has already conducted the investigation, but politically, they will not move forward on it. But they did move forward on the graces and on the racetrack, you see. So when they lend themselves to this kind of behavior, a cover-up is not far-fetched, and it's not make-believe. The health department having the ability, and they talk about risk assessment, and they use Dr. Roger, I can't think of his last name, risk assessment. Well, if you're playing by the rules today, and it says that you can have 10 parts per billion of chlordane, and they tell you this is what you have to handle it and how you have to handle it, and this is how you must transport it, and no human beings can be exposed to that. And then when the military comes and says, well, that's too expensive to comply. Oh, well, we'll just change the numbers for you. We'll increase the numbers. What do you need? You think 20, 21 parts per billion would be okay? I think that's more than enough. Okay, well, we'll give you a little buffer. Didn't change the constituents or the dangers of that's presented by these chemicals. So I speak with experience and knowledge. I say that this AOC, I would encourage you to ask them to just ignore it, do away with it, start all over,
You there?
Yes, I am. I got a little. Include
you're okay?
I'm fine. Include the Board of Water Supply. Include them in the beginning and also the end, and have them sitting there privy to this, because we're not talking about the makeup of jet fuel and the mixture rates ratios that would threaten this country's security. We're talking about people that's going to be drawing water from the tap, drinking and eating and drinking and bathing, or drinking and watering and spreading this contaminants all over the place. So we need, and we owe it to those people that are out there with immune deficiencies or problems, compromised health conditions. All of that matters. And when you exclude these people. Now, just in closing, document availability. All data, information, and records created and maintained for purposes of implementation of this AOC and all records relating to facility operations and maintenance or site conditions shall be made available to the regulators upon request unless Navy or DLA assert a claim that such documents are legally privileged from disclosure and meet the burden of this demonstrating to the regulatory agency that such privileges exist. Navy and DLNA may assert a claim that certain documents or portions of documents are protected from public disclosure under federal or state law. Documents exempt from disclosure under applicable laws such as FOIA, Procurement Integrity Act, Private Act, Privacy Act, Navy and DLA shall clearly mark the material in which such a claim is asserted. I can't imagine, unless it's how much you paid a contractor and some contract information or specific information that would violate that, I don't see what there would be a secret. We know that they are present there, so.
Well, I guess I'm listening to all of this and it's like, well, they sure cover their ass, you know.
Yeah, only for those with blinders on. Because when their butts are this wide and they're making such grave mistakes or so blatant, it's easy to see. So I encourage all of you to attend that meeting, and it's in your best interest. And it again, it is at June 18th, 2015, at 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and it will be at the Mauna Loa Middle School Cafeteria, 1289 Mahiola Street in Honolulu. And you might want to go to www.epa.gov/region9/redhill. www.epa.gov/region9/redhill. Or you can go to www.health.hawaii.gov/redhill. And pick up those documents there. And we will see you next week. And thank you. Thank you, Marsha, for calling in. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you so much. Thank you for all you're doing.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.